First off, I'd like to start by thanking Mr. Kroenke. Getting a chance to spend a couple days with, getting a chance to be with him for the last couple days, get to know him, what he's about. You can feel the passion and the commitment that he has for bringing a championship caliber team to the city of Los Angeles. This is a guy that understands the game of football, knows what it takes to create a winning culture, and very excited about the opportunity to work for a great owner who is committed to bringing a championship to this city. Mr. Dan Snyder, Bruce Allen, Jay Gruden, and Scott McLuhan, and the entire Washington Redskins organization. I spent the last 7 years there and formed some of the most special relationships that I was able to develop there, and it was a great experience for me. Relationships that I'll carry on with me as I continue my coaching journey here in LA. And that opportunity was something that I'll always cherish.
Drag up that diesel.
This is it. Put it all on the line.
It's personal today. It's personal today.
Let's start fast. Finish strong, baby.
We here now, but we ain't satisfied. Our will, our way, our win. 8-0-3. 1-2-3. Dominate. Let's set the tone. Hey, physical football for 60 minutes.
Man,
is incredible. They know what call's coming.
This is our house.
We must protect this house.
You are in the Loud House.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, yes indeed, your boy is back. He is in the Loud House this morning with you on a divisional playoff weekend. It's ice, ice, baby. As I throw a little shade on your NFL weekend. Yeah, ice storms. Predicted ice storms for this area. Predicted ice storms in Kansas City, pushing back the Chiefs-Steelers game. But that's okay, because football will happen one way or the other. It would not be January. Or, better yet, let me say, it would not be the offseason here in Washington if it was not filled with stories and headlines. So much has happened since I was last on the air with you. But not only that, so much has happened over the course of the last week. I mean, the Redskins, not in the playoffs, that's the top story. But no, there's more. Defensive coordinator fired. And then I even posted this. Even though I'm not with you on the air, I'm still with you on social media. You can always follow the Loud House at In the Loud House on Twitter, the Loud House, THELOUDHOUSE on Facebook. Follow your boy Chris Dowdell, Chris1067 at Chris1067 on Twitter. ChrisD1067, that is. And give me your Facebook friend request to get all your latest on Redskins info or stuff that I just repost or retweet. But Sean McVay, no longer the OC here in Washington, D.C. with your Washington Redskins. So a lot going on, not to mention the biggest story outside of the Redskins missing the playoffs is the Kirk Cousins contract and what the Redskins will do with Kirk Cousins this offseason. That's been kind of put on the back page of your sports section in lieu of the Redskins hiring a new defensive coordinator or new offense and slash new offensive coordinator. But I said that earlier in the week. You know, a lot of people thought, oh, Sean McVay, not going to be a guy that's going to get a job at 30. Sean McVay, as you've heard so many other people talk about, is a very impressive person. I mean, you just hear him speak. You hear his confidence. You hear his knowledge and his football acumen. The guy knows what he's talking about. A lot with this Redskins offense changed after Sean McVay took over the play-calling duties. A lot on this Redskins offense changed with Kirk Cousins after Sean McVay took over. So Sean McVay's now gone. And of course, overnight, in case you haven't heard it, there's a new linebackers coach with the Los Angeles Rams that Sean McVay just recently took over? And that's former Redskins defensive coordinator Joe Barry taking over as linebackers coach with Sean with the Los Angeles Rams. So the Rams making a big splash. And we'll get to the defensive coordinator position in the next segment. But McVay said from the beginning, if he got the position as head coach, he wanted to bring Wade Phillips in with him as his defensive coordinator. Now, Wade Phillips was a guy that the Redskins supposedly, or from what I apparently, heavily coveted. Wade Phillips deciding to go take his talents to L.A., take his talents with Sean McVay, along with Joe Barry. Yeah, it's a hip-hop morning, an icy hip-hop morning here in the Loud House. But you can see what's happening there. They're building a team. They're building some continuity. Sean McVay, a very, very impressionable guy. Very, you know, silver tongue, very sharp. So it's no surprise that a lot of these guys are jumping on board with him. It's not a surprise that a lot of these guys are jumping on the Sean McVay ship. With him this morning. So much to get to today. We're going to be joined at 8:30. We're going to be joined by my good buddy, Brian McNally, 106.7 The Fan's beat reporter for the Washington Redskins, will join us. And we're going to ask Brian, we're going to ask him about all these things. We're going to talk about the Kirk Cousins situation, that a lot of the stuff that's getting put on the back page. We're going to talk to him about the offensive coordinator hire. We're going to talk to him about the defensive coordinator hire here in Washington and who he might think might be the best fit here in Washington. But what has led us to this point? And what's going to happen here now that McVay is no longer here in Washington? What's going to happen here in Washington once a new offensive, and who is going to be that one coordinator that's going to change things here? I take a look at, and you know, you hear a lot of rumor and speculation about Jay Gruden taking over the play calling duties. You hear a lot of speculation about, oh, Matt Kavanaugh being an option. You know, again, there's a guy that everybody seems to have forgotten about, and I'm going to make sure I bring it up when I speak with Brian McNally here in about 22 minutes. But Bill Callahan, you brought this guy in, offensive line coach from the Dallas Cowboys, to make improvements on your offensive line. And here's a guy that you have sitting right there that you, at one point you thought of making him your head coach or a possible head coach successor. If the Jay Gruden experiment didn't work. But there's Bill Callahan. And he's done the best that he can with the talent that he's had on the field. And again, I'm not going to get into that. We're gonna get into the defensive side later. I feel a little bit of a different way about the Joe Barry situation. I feel a little bit of a different way about that. And we're going to jump on that when we talk about the defensive coordinator, why Wade Phillips didn't come here. Chuck Sapienza had a good take on that. We'll talk about that, of course, and also the Kirk Cousins situation with Chris Russell later on this morning. But a lot of different options, a lot of different ways the Redskins can go. Would they go outside for their new offensive coordinator? I mean, we saw what Jay Gruden was able to do when he was play calling and the pressure that was on Jay Gruden when he was making the play calling. And, you know, it may not just be coaches that follow McVay to L.A. I mean, there's a lot of guys on this team that love McVay, that love McVay as a coach, and like McVay as a coach more so than Gruden. I mean, could we see Deshaun Jackson and or both Pierre Garçon in Los Angeles next year to help Sean McVay? Wouldn't that miraculously change or increase or better make a better performing offense in LA than the one they have this year? I mean, you change that offensive overnight if you add not one, but both of those guys. I know Pierre Garçon was a big Sean McVay fan. So it's not out of the realm of possibility that guys follow him down the road. No, is that on the table for the Redskins? Is it on the table? With the salary cap situation that it is, you got Kirk Cousins looming in the wings. You have yourself in a position where you need to at least bring one of these guys back in Pierre Garçon or Deshaun Jackson. But there's a possibility you could lose both. And lose both quickly. So there's a lot of decision-making that needs to be done over the next couple of weeks as we get closer to the NFL draft, to free agency. A lot of decisions. And you like to think that the Redskins will have their coaching staff in line and in place by then. There's a strong possibility that they won't, but I really do believe that they'll go outside for the defensive coordinator. I mean, a lot of people talking about Greg Minuski, but you got qualified candidates for the OC on staff right here in Washington. You got qualified people that are prepared and ready to take over the OC duties if for some reason Jay Gruden doesn't take on that responsibility himself. I think that's a bad idea. Days to the franchise tag deadline, 46 days and counting. What will the Washington Redskins do with the franchise tag? We're going to talk to Chris Russell about that at 9 a.m. 103 days to the NFL draft. Now, a lot of people have been talking, and I don't want to make a big deal about this, but in a way, it is a big deal. A lot of people have been talking about Scott McLuhan. I've been one of those people that have been guilty of saying, "In Scott, we trust." And in a lot of ways, I do trust the guy. I do like Scott McLuhan. He's hit on some of his draft picks, but he's missed on a few as well. Here's a question that I don't think has been asked enough, particularly in the DMV area when it comes to Scott McLuhan. We've seen two drafts by Scott McLuhan. And I know. We've heard the quote by Jay Gruden. You get a guard and a wide receiver that's never touched the field. I get it. But you look at those two drafts and you wonder, what is Scott McLuhan's identity? What is your identity, sir? And I know, Chris, where are you going with this? I'm going to tell you. You look at the draft where the 2 years ago with Washington Redskins drafted Brandon Scherff. Brandon Scherff, nobody's making a big deal about this now because Brandon Scherff is a guard who's actually seems to be giving the Redskins dividends because he's a Pro Bowler. Okay. Here's where I'm going with this. Scott McLuhan is a guy who the following year drafted Josh Dotson because he was the best player available on his board. When Scott McLuhan was hired here 2.5 seasons ago, he said his philosophy was draft core Redskins, take the best players available, and build core Redskins from the ground up and not spend a ton of money bringing in guys who aren't core Redskins. Okay. Not exactly his words, but that sums it up. So if that's your philosophy, then why do you draft a Brandon Scherff where you draft him? I think it was number 5 overall, if I remember correctly. And at the time, as I recall, Brandon Scherff is a guy that you could have gotten way down the board. But your philosophy is you're taking the best player available. If Brandon Scherff is not the best player available, and that's your philosophy, then why do you take him where you take him? I just don't get it. I want to know what your identity is. Because your two drafts, your two first-round picks 2 years in a row are contradicting themselves. I'd be interested to see what happens this year. Now, I'm not against the fact that he took Brandon Scherff right there. I'm not opposed to it. I just want to know who's making the call? Who is really running the ship over there? Who's really running the draft board? Are you really running the draft board? Was that draft because it was a draft for need or best player available? Because I think everybody would agree with me when I say drafting for need is a must for this team. And if that's the case, A, if you knew you weren't going to give Kirk Cousins a contract, why didn't you take a quarterback last year? Or at least one that could have played sooner. Number two, why do you take a wide receiver on a team that's already stacked at skill position? On a team that's lacking talent on the defensive line, lacking talent at linebacker, and then you go spend a ton of money to bring Josh Norman in. And I was one that was on board with Josh Norman coming in because you had a clear need in the secondary. But again, Scott, what is your identity? Who are you? What are we going to see in 103 days on the draft? Are we going to see a draft for need, or are we going to see the best player available? God forbid the best player available be another wide receiver. All right. Again, the circus that we have here. We never keep the good people. The good people go somewhere else and thrive. Which is why you see so many people following Sean McVay to LA. And I don't think this is it. Be interesting to see when free agency opens up. All right, on the other side, we will jump into the defensive coordinator situation. I'll give you my take on that. I got an interesting take on Joe Barry. Ran a little long this segment. I had to get that off my chest about Scott McLuhan. We'll get into that. And then coming up at 8:30, Brian McNally, Redskins beat reporter for 106.7 The Fan, will join us. You are in the Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580.
Use the force and turn up the radio.
It's the Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580.
I think we make Redskin decisions around here, what's best for this football team. And I don't think it's Scott. I don't think it's Bruce. I don't think it's this me. I think together we make decisions. I feel really good about that. I think he listens to my input. I listen to his. And ultimately, who has a final say really doesn't matter because we're all on the same page.
We make Redskins decisions around here. It's not Scott. It's not Bruce. It's a team. It's a group effort. We make Redskins decisions. But again, Jay's going to be in charge of who he brings in at OC. And he's going to be in charge of who comes in at DC. I want to touch quickly on the Chuck Sapienza article that he wrote. And really, really great segment last night on Overtime with Chris Russell. Chuck was on there, and Chuck talked about his insider. I throw air quotes up when I say that. His insider that told him the reasons Wade Phillips decided not to come here. Wade Phillips had no intention on coming here, and it was mainly because of a lack of talent on this team. And I posted that earlier this week, and somebody posted behind me that that's crap. This is a talented team. Excuse me, where? When you have a Redskins team that allows Detroit to march down the field on them in virtually less than a minute to win the football game, where's your talent on defense? Where has your talent on defense been all year? I get it. Junior Gallet's hurt. Okay. Junior Gallet's coming back next year. Okay. But do you honestly think Junior Gallet makes a difference on what happens defensively on this team? I mean, he's not the only one that's saying that. There's a lot of coordinators out there that are going to pass on the Redskins and take other jobs just because other teams have more talent, more athleticism, and are just a better situation than the Washington Redskins. That's a reality. And again, that is a result of 2 years under Scott McLuhan. And I don't want to blame it all on Scott, because Scott told us day one that it was going to be a 3-5 year process before things changed here. But again, that's one of the questions I want to talk to Brian McNally about the fact that, hey, are a lot of guys going to pass on this opportunity because of a lack of talent on the Redskins team? You look at all the guys that the Redskins, I mean, Gus Bradley was the guy that the Redskins interviewed this past Wednesday, but Anthony Lynn agreed to a 4-year deal with the Chargers. Of course, and Adam Schefter reported earlier this week that if Lynn went, that wherever Lynn went, Gus Bradley would become his defensive coordinator. So that's not etched in stone. That's not saying that Gus is definitely going to want to take that situation. But wouldn't you think that the Chargers situation might be a little better than the Redskins situation? Oh, Chargers are pretty bad. But the Redskins, clearly where they were this year because of an offense, of the third, fourth rated offense in the league. That's the reason why they were 8-7-1 this season, not because the defense was putting up stellar numbers. So you don't have Phillips. You can hold out hope that Gus Bradley, which would obviously be the Redskins' top option, I would think, at this point. You can hold out hope that Gus Bradley comes here. I mean, Steve Wilks was another name. But apparently he might be staying in Carolina to take over as defensive coordinator in replace of Sean McDermott, who took the job with the Bills. So I mean, that just leaves one guy that you interviewed, Gus Bradley, who's still out there. One guy that you interviewed, Mike Pettine, who's a year removed from coaching in the NFL, whose last year was head coach of the Browns, who went 3-13. Again, it's not a best or ideal scenario for anybody coming in here. But apparently Mike Pettine might be the leading candidate right now. Another name that has popped up or surfaced overnight last night, you heard Chris Russell also talk about that last night, was Jim Tomsula, who's interested in coming to Washington as a defensive line coach in the event that Greg Minuski were to get promoted to defensive coordinator. So a lot of different options, a lot of scenarios to throw out there, throw around. But at the end of the day, I mean, if a guy like Wade Phillips is saying that, again, could Wade Phillips have come here 2 years ago? Would he have come here 2 years ago? Probably. This probably was his ideal spot. He was ready to get on board 2 years ago before Jay Gruden, throw air quotes there, decided to go with Joe Barry. But you're talking about different Wade Phillips now. A guy 70 years old, already got a ring now. He's got options. You got to think maybe Jay Gruden actually did Wade Phillips a favor in hiring Joe Barry. Because with the talent on his team, would Wade Phillips have made a difference? No. At the end of the day, and even coaches know it, talent and players win you games. You can have the greatest scheme in the world. If you don't have the athleticism of the players to implement your plan, it doesn't matter how good the scheme is. All right, on the other side, we're going to be joined by Brian McNally. We're going to ask him a lot of these questions about where the Redskins go. Offensive, defensive coordinator. Maybe even touch on a little bit of the possible offseason moves that this team could make. The likelihood Kirk Cousins is back next season. We'll jump in on with McNally. He's got his ear to the ground. Everything Redskins. We'll talk to him on the other side. I'm Chris Dowdell. You are in the Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580.
There's been an awakening. The Loud House on CBS Sports Radio.
Have you felt it?
1580.
It's really not my decision to make. You know, the ball was in the court of the team last year, and they chose to tag me, and then the same is true this year. You know, so if they don't choose to tag me, then I think that question's valid at that point. But right now, you know, the ball's not in my court.
Washington Redskins quarterback, record-breaking quarterback, Kirk Cousins, Captain Kirk. Talking to him at the end of the season about how he feels about last season, the franchise tag, playing on the franchise tag, what the team, what he expects or what he sees coming forward. The ball's in their court. You know, a lot of questions about Kirk Cousins, a lot of questions about the Washington Redskins, as we talked about in the last segment, at offensive coordinator and defensive coordinator. And I've been talking about it for 32 minutes, and he's here. Brian McNally, beat reporter for 106.7 The Fan. Covers the Washington Redskins for 106.7 The Fan. You can follow him at B. McNally on Twitter. Good morning, Brian. How are you?
What's up, Chris? What's going on?
Thank you, sir. Thank you so much for getting up early with us. So, Brian.
No worries.
You got your ear to the ground. You know everything that's going on down at Redskins Park, at least a lot more than me and a lot of listeners. Where do you think the Washington Redskins will go? There's been a lot of talk about, you know, franchise tag, no franchise tag. McLuhan won't do it. They have to do it. What does it sound like, the direction they may go this season?
Well, I mean, to me, Chris, they have to go franchise tag. You know, look, if you're worried about Kirk long-term, if you're still not completely sold, if you want to keep your keep your flexibility, maybe draft a quarterback this year for the future. That's all well and good. You can do that. Unless you're completely sold that Colt McCoy is a legitimate option for next year, which, you know, maybe they certainly like Colt. They signed him last offseason for 3 years for a reason. Then that's fine. But it would take a lot for me to think they would be completely willing just to let Kirk walk, because that's essentially what you're doing. If you don't franchise him, to me, he's out the door. The chances of a long-term deal getting done by March 1st, I don't know that they are great. And if that doesn't happen and you let him hit the open market, you're certainly not going to get much better of a deal than you would have if you franchise him. Even if you do get a discount, you know, even if you get a deal done and it's a little bit less than you're willing to pay, do you want to lock yourself in for, you know, 4 or 5 years, which you would be doing in a long-term deal? So to me, the obvious course is use the franchise tag and then hope that you can get a deal done that can maybe reduce that cap hit. And if you can't, well, then you have the flexibility to move on next year, because next year is really the time, Chris, where it's going to be the rubber hits the road, because you're not going to pay Kirk $33 million, which you'd have to in the 2018 season if you franchised him again. So it really is only an option for one more year where you can reasonably be okay with the amount of cap space he would take up. After that, it becomes a non-starter.
Well, you know that Sean McVay is no longer the OC here. We know Sean McVay was very instrumental in developing Kurt and instrumental in Kirk's success here. Do you think that's going to make a difference in what we see from him if the Redskins franchise tag him next season?
In terms of having an option to go somewhere else?
Well, not only that, but just performance. I mean, you know, depending on, I know there's a lot of speculation out there, Jay Gruden possibly calling plays, Matt Kavanaugh, mm-hmm. you know, maybe even Bill Callahan. That's going to be my next question is where do they go? But do you think that'll impact his performance on the team next year, losing Sean McVay, and maybe even impact whether or not he really still wants to be here?
I think they'll be okay. It's still Jay's offense. You still have veteran guys on staff that he's worked well with. They elevated Matt Kavanaugh. He has a really good relationship with Matt Kavanaugh. You know, I know Colt McCoy called Matt the MVP of the 2015 season because he dealt with a quarterback room that was just so, dysfunctional, I guess, is unique maybe is a better word to describe it, with Robert Griffin III not playing at all and Colt wishing he was starting. And obviously they turned to Kirk and he played all 16 games. But so I think he's okay in that perspective. I mean, you know, they're not changing offenses. Jay, if he decides to call the plays himself, will be fine in that respect. You would, we all know it didn't go as well as they wanted the first year when he called plays, but he has a good, it's his offense. He has a good feel for it. I don't think much should change in that respect. So I think they'll be fine in that case, but you know, long-term does, if you let Kirk, let Kirk hit the open market, he certainly would want to play for Sean McVay. And so then that's when it becomes kind of an option for him maybe. And also let's say, hey, he has a good relationship with Kyle Shanahan too. Let's say Kyle Shanahan goes to San Francisco, which is still eminently possible. He's getting ready for the Falcons Seahawks game. But if Kyle is in San Francisco as the head coach, and again, Kirk hits the open market, say next season, that's a perfect, place, a landing spot. Again, an offense he knows, an offense he feels he can run with a coach who believes in him. So you'd have two options for Kirk in that case. And I think, places he would love to play if the Redskins decided to either let him test the open market or let him move on.
Yeah, and definitely two head coaches / former Redskins offensive coordinators who would definitely be salivating to get Kirk. Well, that being said, what names are out there? What are you hearing as potential? Are they going to stay in-house at the OC position?
I think they stay in-house. It would make too much sense to promote those guys. You have to look at people with ties to Jay Gruden, I think, because look at it that way, Chris. At this point, it's going to be his fourth year, and this is a huge year for him. He has to, he can't afford a 5-11 season. He can't afford a big slip, or that'll probably be the end for Jay Gruden. So he's not going to trust his fate just to anyone. He's not just going to pull in someone that he kind of knows or doesn't really have someone to deal with or someone he has past relations with. That's why I think he's kind of more likely to bet on himself and just take over the play calling duties. But if he does go outside the organization, it really, really has to be a good fit. Someone with ties to him in Cincinnati, probably more likely. I doubt he dips back into his past in Tampa. Just because of how long ago it was. So that to me is the most important thing for Jay is knowing how big a year it is. Who is he willing to trust essentially his future to? And to me, the best guy to do that is Jay Gruden. So that's why I kind of think he'll be the guy to call plays and you can elevate one of Bill Callahan or Matt Kavanaugh up to kind of deal with that, to be offensive coordinator, but not necessarily the play caller.
Yeah, definitely. A lot of questions there as to whether or not, you know, especially with his future on the line, who's going to be your quarterback at that point, too, whether or not they get a deal done with Kirk or not, or franchise tag him. What are you hearing in terms of defensive coordinator? I know, you know, a lot of people were on the Gus bus, but Anthony Lynn got the job, you know, and said that he would bring Gus in as his defensive coordinator. Wade Phillips didn't come here, obviously, joining Sean McVay in Los Angeles. What other names? I mean, are we still looking at Mike Pettine or Bill Musgrave possibly getting a promotion? What are we looking at here?
Yeah, I think Mike Pettine is a really good possibility. I mean, he's not a guy we've also heard, you know, Chris, with the other guys like Wade Phillips and these guys that they were interested in. Those guys had other options. Gus Bradley certainly, you know, especially once Anthony Lynn took over in San Diego, has long been rumored to be partnered with Anthony Lynn. If he got a head coaching job, that seemed like a long shot early in the week, but Lynn kind of emerged as the dark horse in San Diego and, you know, got that job. So Gus Bradley, I believe, interviewed there yesterday. We'll see what happens, but you would bet that seems like a good fit for him. So if the Redskins have to move on from him, certainly Greg Minuski on staff in-house as experience. He was Scott McLuhan's defensive coordinator in San Francisco for a number of years. He has that same experience in Indianapolis. He played here. He was on staff here last year with Jay Gruden. So I think that would be a good fit. They could certainly go in that direction. And Mike Pettine is another guy we haven't really heard interview for other jobs. It doesn't mean he hasn't, but I think Mike Pettine would be, you know, he had great success with Rex Ryan in New York. Things didn't work out in Cleveland as a head coach, but that, you know, it hasn't worked out for many people in Cleveland, Chris. So, you know, I think Mike Pettine would be considered a fine hire if the Redskins went in that direction too. So they still have options. I know people were kind of set on Bradley or set on Wade Phillips, but they can still get a good defensive coordinator out of this. And if you even want to wait, you know, a couple other names could shake out here in the next day or two as seasons come to an end in the next day or two. So that could happen as well. So I think they'll be fine. But you know, they can still kind of take their time a little bit here and make sure they get it right, because they really do have to get this one right.
We are joined in Loud House by Redskins beat reporter for 106.7 The Fan, Brian McNally. You can follow him at B McNally on Twitter. Now, Brian, I got to ask you, it's slated to be a very dismal day. It's football weekend, but it's slated to be a very dismal day. It's going to be icy and rainy outside. I'm here at the station. I made it. What is Brian McNally's day like? Like, I'm just imagining you sitting in front of multiple computers, Twitter in front of you, everything rolling, all your Redskins news ready. You know, a cup of coffee, cocoa, you got your flat screens with TV ready. What is your day going to look like today, Brian McNally?
Yeah, I'm listening to the ice knock off, bang off the window here, Chris. So I don't think I'm going anywhere. I think I'm going to shutter the car today and just hang out, watch some football, certainly watch the two games set for today. And you just make phone calls, text, you know, keep in touch with people. Don't really expect over the weekend, especially, you know, news doesn't necessarily break with coaching searches, but you never know. So, kind of keep your ear to the ground a little bit and, just kind of be ready for, if the Redskins make a decision, cause these are huge decisions for them coming up. So, replacing both coordinators and kind of setting themselves up. This is a big 8-week stretch for the Redskins. It feels like, wow, they don't play a game for 8 months. September's a long way off. That's fine. But this is when you start that process. And from now until free agency, when they decide on the fate of DeSean Jackson and Pierre Garçon and what pieces Jay Gruden and Kirk Cousins will have next year, and the decision on Kirk Cousins himself. I mean, this is a fascinating offseason for the Redskins. So, it kind of starts here this next week or so as they try to figure out a replacement for Joe Barry and a replacement for Sean McVay.
And there you have it. You heard it from the best in the business. Brian McNally, give him a follow. Make sure you follow him at B McNally on Twitter. Thank you, thank you, thank you so much for getting up early with us this morning, Brian. Have a great weekend and enjoy your football, brother.
Appreciate it, Chris. Thanks. Do the same.
Thank you. There you have it. Brian McNally joining us in the Loud House, letting you know where the Redskins stand. And again, no earth-shattering news there from Brian. Everything kind of as we thought it would be, you know, more than likely. But Brian makes a good point. And I've been hearing a lot of people talking about this on Twitter and Facebook earlier this week as I've been posting various reports about this situation. And a lot of people saying, oh, well, Chris, you know, Jay Gruden's not going to hire a guy that can come in and replace him. Jay Gruden, you know, they should hire a guy that can come in and replace him. And I'm just thinking, why would Jay Gruden even be thinking that way? These guys have egos. He knows that his butt's on the line. He knows that if things go badly next year, that all directions will look towards him. But again, I ask the question, when is the last time we saw a Redskins team with two consecutive winning seasons? When's the last time? So Jay Gruden's not doing a terrible job here. He's just is having the unfortunate situation of not enough talent on defense and not being able to get things done on defense this year. They had a tough schedule. I don't think you people realize the Redskins had a very tough schedule this year and still managed to win 8 games and at least get themselves a respectable winning season with a tough schedule. Now, just I mind you, and I add, just imagine if you had a defense. I hope Jay Gruden does well next year. I don't blame him. If he wants to take on the play calling, so be it. I know I would feel much more comfortable with my fate lying in my own hands rather than someone else. All right, on the other side, we'll get into the loudmouth. And then right after that, top of the hour, we'll be joined by Chris Russell, talk show host, 106.7 The Fan. Talk a little. Chris has an interesting perspective on what might happen with Kirk Cousins. We're going to talk about that with Chris at the top of the hour. But we'll get to the loudmouth and more on the other side. I'm Chris Dowdell. You are in the Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580.
It's the Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580.
Dear Lord, the battle we go through life.
Dear Lord, the battle we go through life.
We ask for a chance is fair.
We ask for a chance is fair.
Chance to equal our strife.
Chance to equal our strife.
Chance to do or dare.
Chance to do or dare.
We should win.
We should win.
Let it be by the code.
Let it be by the code.
Faith and the honor held high.
Faith and the honor held high.
We should lose.
We should lose.
Stand by the road.
Stand by the road.
Cheers, the winners go by.
Cheers, the winners go by.
Day by day.
Day by day.
We get better and better.
We get better and better.
We can't beat, beat.
We can't beat,
beat. Boom, beat, beat.
Your boy is back for another edition of the Loud Mouth. I'm up against it, so let's begin. Don't troll Russell Wilson with future. Message to Atlanta Falcons. If you're thinking of hilariously trolling Russell Wilson with future during the NFC divisional playoffs this week, you better think again.
Shut up.
That's how I feel. Because legend Chris Carter thinks it's a bad idea. The Seahawks play the Falcons in Atlanta this weekend, and there were rumblings. The Falcons DJ would try to get in with Wilson's head by piping in some future tunes during the game. While that would be absolutely amazing, Carter said that would be a bad idea when you talk to TMZ talked to him out in L.A. And thinking that being, you don't want to poke the bear. You don't want to poke that 5-7 bear and Russell Wilson. He might be right. But we think the Falcons should poke it anyway. Future certainly seems to be. All right, maybe I should have read that one. All right. Some of you are going to get that, some of you won't, but it's okay. Okay. Chicago Cubs squeezing in White House visit right before Trump gets out of office. This is quite convenient, right? Chicago Cubs have officially scheduled their White House visit after winning the World Series, and it's going to happen 4 days before President Obama leaves office. That's right. Team officials have confirmed the World Series champs will get to hang out with POTUS, the President of the United States, a Chicago native, but a Sox fan, on January 16th. I believe that's Monday. They will be the last professional team to visit during the Obama administration. Last team to visit Obama.
There's a job to do. You got to do it yourself.
That's right, Obama. Get those Cubs in there. Donald Trump takes office on the 20th. What's interesting is the Ricketts family, who own the Cubs, has sparred with Trump in the past. In fact, Trump tweeted back in February, "I hear the Ricketts family," this is quoted from Donald Trump's Twitter account. He says, quote, "I hear the Ricketts family, who own the Chicago Cubs, are secretly spending money against me. They better be careful. They've got a lot to hide." You know, I can almost hear, I don't know if any of you guys had a chance to take a listen to Mark Hamill's reading of a Donald Trump tweet in the Joker's voice. Very entertaining. If you did not get a chance to, maybe I'll post it on the Loud House Facebook page. You can take a listen to it. I can just hear Mark Hamill saying this in the Joker voice. It's really, really funny. All right, but moving on. The Ricketts family have said Trump is wrong about hidden dirt. Still unclear if the beef had anything to do with the timing of the White House visit, but it's very interesting. All right, moving on. Floyd Mayweather, of course, you have already heard about, I believe it was Dana Carvey, offering $25 million apiece for Floyd Mayweather to get it on in an MMA event against Conor McGregor. Don't know if that's going to happen, but I think it's going to take a little more than $25 million to entice old Floyd, considering he made anywhere from $220 to $330 million. I think it was $220 to $300 million at the last Pacquiao fight he had. So it might take a little more than $25 million to get Floyd to come out of retirement. All right, but moving on, Floyd Mayweather actually had a message for Ronda Rousey saying true champs bounce back. Floyd Mayweather said Ronda Rousey is still a legend and should keep her head up after her loss to Amanda Nunes, telling the UFC star a true champ can bounce back. Mayweather opened up about Rousey to fighthype.com, saying people unfairly try to pit him against Ronda in the past because of his 2010 domestic violence incident. Mayweather denied beating his ex-girlfriend, but says, quote, I am guilty of restraining someone. Yes, I'm not perfect, end quote. God only made one thing perfect. That's my boxing record, end quote. Floyd then turned the focus back to Rousey, encouraging her to get back in the octagon and fight again, saying, quote, stay focused. Go back to the drawing board, he added. 2017 is a whole new year, end quote. Very nice of Floyd to give Ronda some encouraging words, especially after that fight. It was ridiculous. All right. The final story. This is really funny. I have to add this. Ex-NBA player Orin Green arrested for a creepy butt rub incident.
What did you say?
I said Orin Green was arrested for a creepy butt rubbing.
What did you say?
Butt rubbing Orin Green arrested?
What did you say?
I'm not going to say it again. Ex-NBA star Orin Green, a 2005 second round pick, was arrested in Florida, of all places, on Monday morning after officials say he snuck into two homes and rubbed sleeping women's butts.
Bruh.
I know, isn't that a creepy fetish? Yeah, creepy. According to police reports obtained by TMZ Sports, the 34-year-old ex-Boston Celtic, of course he's a Celtic, Eric Green. Of course he's a Celtic. Is he a relation of you, Eric Green Jr.? Just wondering.
Bruh.
I know, it's a bad stick. All right, so... the 34-year-old ex-Boston Celtic player entered the first home early in the morning and went to the master bedroom where he encountered a 56-year-old woman lying in bed.
Bruh.
Green then left without further incident and went to the second home across the street where he allegedly went to the bedroom then and saw then 40-year-old woman sleeping in the bed.
Bruh.
Green allegedly kissed the sleeping woman on the neck and rubbed her butt.
Bruh.
The woman woke up and started yelling. Green allegedly booked it and went to his girlfriend's house, which is in the same neighborhood. Cops found Green and booked him for felony burglary and misdemeanor battery. And then he posed for the saddest mugshot ever.
Bruh.
I know. I'm thinking the guy was probably intoxicated or in some kind of drugs and just couldn't find his girlfriend's house. I don't know. I hope that's the case. I did some kind of creepy sneaking into a house butt rubbing fetish. Not something that you want to do on a regular basis. All right, coming up on the other side, Chris Russell from 106.7 The Fan, former beat reporter for the Washington Redskins. You can read all his work at dchotread.com. Well, join us. He's got an interesting take on what the Washington Redskins might be able to do to get Kirk Cousins, maybe even get him at a lower cost. On the other side, I'm Chris Dowdell. You are in the Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580.
Where do we begin?
The Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580.
You know, if I didn't think I could play still, I wouldn't be doing what I'm doing. So I'll continue to work and continue to prepare and always things to improve on. And like I told these guys earlier, I got to practice and compete 3 days a week every week this year. And, you know, I love practice. So we all want to see the field. But when you're not seeing the field, you got to find ways to improve. And I know I did that this year.
Colt McCoy saying he learned a lot from the bench this year. He learned a lot sitting behind Kirk. Got nice and rested. Maybe he's your guy next year. It's not like the Redskins are actually going to let Kirk Cousins walk. I mean, Sean McVay is gone. Joe Barry's gone. Kirk Cousins is on the line. People want Jay Gruden fired. I mean, it would not be the offseason in Washington if we were not dealing with these type of issues and asking these type of questions this time of the year. One guy I know who he's glad he's not on the beat anymore. My good buddy, Chris Russell. You can follow Chris Russell on Twitter at RussellMania621. Follow all his great, wonderful work on dchotread.com. Good morning, Chris. How you doing, buddy?
You know, you are too nice. You're much nicer than most of my Twitter followers, I can tell you that much. How are you, pal?
I every now and then I'll get on there. I'm doing great this morning, Chris. Thanks for getting up so early with me. Every now and then I get on there and try and buck them a little bit for you, but Twitter. Twitter's evil.
I would tell you this, it's an impossible task to try and win that battle. And I've just learned from doing this, I don't know if I'm right on this, you know, but 95% of the, and I'll lovingly call them maniacs on Twitter, don't actually exist in 95% of the world. But, you know, they sometimes manifest themselves in different ways in different pockets of society. And I just look at it as this one really, really, really interesting dynamic of what life is like. in this country in 2017, and I just chalk it up to, oh, well, you can't win everything and you can't please everyone, and I just go on with my day.
You have to. I mean, it's amazing that people can actually get up in the morning and put their pants on without, oh, let me go and find someone to harass on Twitter today.
You know, sometimes that's a challenge from what I understand. Sometimes that is a challenge indeed.
All right, Chris. Well, I heard you so often in great shows this week. The interview you did last night with Chuck Sapienza, wonderful, wonderful. Listen, if you guys haven't had a chance to listen to that, you know, I definitely recommend, if there's a podcast out there that you have somewhere, Chris, let people listen to this thing, because it was a great, great interview that you did with him. Answered a lot of my questions. And Chuck Sapienza is a well-liked, well-known guy in this town and knows his stuff. But what he said about the defensive coordinator's position here in Washington and why Wade Phillips decided not to come here, the lack of talent. And of course, I've heard so much on Twitter the last couple of days about how that's just,
right.
You know, there's so much talent on this team, right? I mean, what is your take on the defensive coordinator position? Now that Wade Phillips is gone, it doesn't appear that the Gus bus will be coming here since Anthony Lynn got the job, and he may follow Anthony Lynn, I believe, to Buffalo. What is your take on what's going to happen here at the D.C.?
Yeah, so, you know, this has been my public cry for the last, seven years, is there was not enough talent last year, but there hasn't been enough talent, period, in any way, shape, or form, in any year over the last, really, 8 years, quite honestly. I've been covering this team since 2009, and in 2009, Jim Zorn's last year, you know, they didn't have enough talent there either, even though they added Albert Haynesworth, you know. So it was an old, aging defense, and it crumbled when it didn't have offensive support. So here would be my overall take. If you want to win football games, if you want to make the playoffs each and every year, and if you want to win championships, if you abide by the adage that offense sells tickets and defense wins championships, while that's not always true, I guarantee you, if you buy into that adage more, which the Redskins have had a religious aversion to, you will win more games, you will make the playoffs more years, and you will win, or have at least a chance to win, a championship. And that's the bottom line. I don't care if the coordinators, Jim Haslett, Joe Barry, Greg Minuski, Gus Bradley, or Santa Claus, you can bring in anybody you want here. You might get slightly better results than you got under Haslett and Joe Barry. You might get a little bit more, and maybe that's just what they're looking for, but you're never going to get that Seahawks type of flavor, that Kansas City Chiefs type of flavor. The really, really good teams, when they win championships, their defense comes through big time in the end when they need them the most.
And that's just something we haven't had here. Like you said, Chris, it's just a lack of talent. And I have one question to ask you before we move to the OC. In terms of Scott McLuhan, what is his identity? And am I wrong? And I brought this up in the first segment. He said he was going to come in. He was going to be the type of guy that was going to draft the best player available. Mm-hmm. But his first draft, mm-hmm. he drafts a guy number 5 overall, if I'm not mistaken, a tackle at the time, which turned into a guard, which you could have got later in the draft, but still not the best player on the board. But you come back a year later, and you say you take a wide receiver, a position that we're stacked with on this team, and right. you clearly have needs elsewhere, but you take a wide receiver and you say, well, it's the best player on the board. I'm confused about the identity. I mean, what's your take? I mean, am I wrong in thinking we still don't know who this guy is and how he drafts?
No, I think your premise is absolutely correct. And it's more complicated than just boiling it down to, well, the best player on the board. And let me just try and sum it up like this. Brandon Scherff was the best player on the Redskins draft board.
Mm-hmm.
He was, from what we understand, Dante Fowler was number 1, Amari Cooper, who went to Oakland at number 4, was number 2, and Brandon Scherff was number 3. Now, listen, I'm not a scout. I don't know as much about football as Scott McLuhan, but I was not in any way, shape, or form blown away wow by Brandon Scherff specifically in pass protection, and that was as a left tackle. So I thought, okay, if you flip him to right tackle, he's still going to have lots of issues, but at least he'll be better on the right side. We still don't know about Morgan Moses. Well, then he was such a disaster at right tackle, or maybe not a disaster, but he wasn't good enough to justify how they had explained the pick and the initial plan and how they approached training camp. They quickly scrapped that and went inside to right guard. Now, is he a Pro Bowl right guard? He is. He was voted to the Pro Bowl. He sure doesn't play like a Pro Bowl guard to me. He's good. He's not great. He's not number five overall great when you look at what component you want, nastiness, toughness. At times he is, but he's not consistent enough for me. So then you fast forward to Josh Doctson, who played a game and a half and who made an impact in the Dallas Week 2 loss and then, of course, was never heard from again, and we have no idea what the future is. And then you start to think, there was a reason why Jay Gruden lobbed that bomb the day after the season frustratingly ended about lack of first-round picks, because Jay Gruden knows when you combine that with not having a 2013 pick and a 2014 first-round pick, both before he got there and the first offseason that he got there, this is why his team can't truly get over the top. This is why his team struggled to get to 9 wins last year and needed a great December. This is why his team was so inconsistent down the stretch and why they got to 8 wins, yes, but then ultimately fell short, even though they controlled their own destiny, Chris, because they don't have the horses that anybody needs. They don't have the horses that Scott McLuhan needs. They don't have the horses Jay Gruden needs. Now, again, we could pick and part all of these decisions and say, oh, okay, well, I would have done this and I would have done that. The bottom line is they need more talent. They need the type of talent that Scott wants, but blended in with what Jay needs, if that makes sense. See, Scott has this whole thing, I don't want football players, I don't want big fat. Well, if you want that, you know, guys have to be able to run, you know, and that's one thing that worries me about a Scott McLuhan-built team, is he wants big, burly, nasty, physical, fine. But they can't run as fast, especially on defense, as you need them to in this NFL. And then when you marry that philosophy with Jay Gruden, and the fact that he doesn't seem to really want to run the football, he wants to just throw the ball around 65-ish% of the time, and that's how he wants to bail himself out. It seems like, and I know this is really long-winded, Chris, but it seems like there's the marriage there from a philosophy standpoint, even though Jay said they agree on a lot of things, is just not... It's not a harmonious marriage from a philosophy standpoint in terms of what they are actually looking to do with the skill set of their football players. That's just my opinion. I don't know if I'm right or wrong.
I absolutely agree with you, Chris. And the last thing, and the sad thing about it is, now that you know this next season coming up, if things don't go as well as you'd like them to, all eyes are going to look at Gruden. And when's the last time this team has had a coach that's had two consecutive winning seasons? With that being said, I mean, with the OC Sean McVay taking his talents to LA along with Joe Barry. I'm sure you heard about that.
I'm happy for my pal Joe Barry.
I don't think it was all Joe either.
The greatest defensive coordinator. Nobody ever said he was. Nobody ever said he was really good. All we ever said was he was hung out to dry here because he was not given what he was, ideally promised. And he was also chosen because he was easy to control and cheap, quite honestly. I mean, people don't want to talk about that. Everything this organization does with 98% of its people and personnel is because they're controllable and cheap.
What do you think happens this season at OC? Do they promote Matt Kavanaugh, Bill Callahan, or does Jay just take over duties and says, hey, if I'm going down, I'm going down my way? I mean, what is your take on that?
I think ultimately Jay is going to call the plays, and I think that's a mistake. I know some head coaches do it, and I know Sean McVay, who just left, is going to do it with the Rams. And, by the way, I think that's a mistake, too. I think it's too much for them to handle, you know, on game day. And we saw Jay, even without play calling duties, have some clock issues, clock management issues, and some, you know, what some people would call disasters. I would call just kind of really, really, really tough decisions that backfired at the end of first halves in about four or five games this year that just did not look good and did not go the Redskins' way. So with that as the foundation, if you retake over play calls, while I think it's a better idea in 2017 than it was in 2014, I think you're just inviting disaster. To me, what I would do, Chris, just to kind of sum this up quickly, is Bill Callahan's got his hands full with a large, large unit of men on the 53-man roster, and certainly even more during OTAs and training camp. I would not put him as the offensive coordinator and play caller. He's got enough to deal with what the offensive line. Matt Kavanaugh, provided that especially Kirk Cousins is around, and that's the caveat, has a much smaller group and a much smaller unit to work with. So to me, he makes the most sense. He's got experience as a play caller. He's done it on the college level, on the NFL level. And I think it would be a near seamless transition to go from Sean McVay to Matt Kavanaugh and to work it like that. And that's what I would do. I think Jay Gruden ultimately is going to do it himself, and I think it's going to be disastrous at times.
We are joined by talk show host extraordinaire, Chris Russell. Make sure you give him a follow at RussellMania621 on Twitter. Listen to all of his great work at DC Hot Reads. One final question, Chris, before I let you go. You had an interesting take on what the Redskins might do with Kirk Cousins this offseason. A lot of people are talking about franchise tag. A lot of people talking about letting him test the market. A lot of people are talking about just sign a guy. And I really liked what you said, and I thought it was a really great idea because at the end of the day, I thought it was a win-win for the Redskins. What was that you said? What type of tag was that you said we should put on Kirk Cousins?
Yeah, so the caveat, and I appreciate that, Chris, is this. I would franchise tag Kirk Cousins this offseason. Everybody knows I was dead set against it last offseason, and I know that's a whole long story, but I think ultimately I was proven to be correct because of how this season played out. So now you have the option of an exclusive or a non-exclusive tag, or you can not tag him at all, which is what Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk, said on The Fan on Thursday. I would tag him with the thought of, even though I'm not going to give him a long-term deal, and I truly believe that, ideally I need another year to buy another year of time. So my thought was, if you tag him, the exclusive and the non-exclusive franchise tag cost the same this year, which was not the case last year. If you put a non-exclusive franchise tag on him, then you allow Kirk Cousins to have two options. One, he can sign that franchise tag immediately, which there are many people that feel he will do so, like he did last year. And then it's done, it's over, and he's locked in for 2017, and you know you have stability for at least one more year. That's the downside. The upside would be, if you give him the non-exclusive, you allow him to shop his services. He then can go out, shop his services, potentially get huge offers from whatever team it might be, and there's all sorts of teams that could be in the Kirk Cousins market, and then that would allow that team to work out a potential trade with the Redskins, not for the two first-round picks, because I don't know if anybody's going to pay that, plus the type of money we're talking about for Kirk Cousins, but maybe a first and a third, or maybe a first and a fourth, or something like that, where the Redskins could get compensation and immediately use it to reinvest in their defense, their team, their quarterback, their running back, whatever the situation might be, and get something for Kirk Cousins instead of having this overall hanging situation that seems to have no good end attached to it. So that's my suggestion. I'm sure the Redskins won't do it because it makes too much sense, and I understand there's a potential downside, but that's going to be my offseason mantra. That's what I think the Redskins should do, and I'm sure they'll do completely the opposite.
You know what, Chris? I 100% agree with you. He is Chris Russell. You can read all of his work at DC Hot Read. Listen to Chris each and every day on 106.7 The Fan. He does overtime. He does it all. You can follow him also on Twitter at WrestleMania621. Chris, how will you be spending this icy, icy day?
Well, Ice Ice Baby is on my radio already. we're doing a – who is the dude that did that? Vanilla Ice,
right? Yeah,
Vanilla Ice. So I've got that going already. You know, just to celebrate the season, I don't know. I'm just going to try and stay off the roads. I do have to go somewhere a little bit later on. But this is a perfect excuse to not go to the gym today, right? I was thinking about this. You know, I really want to go to the gym, but, geez, I can't find a way to get through the ice. So I'm just not going to be able to go, and I'm going to have to – I don't know, write about Mike Pettine and watch football on TV.
Exactly, exactly. Chris, thank you so much for joining us. If you do go out, be careful, brother.
Thanks, pal. I appreciate it. You're the best.
Thank you. No, you are the best. There he is. The best there is. The best there ever was. The best there ever is. My buddy, Chris Russell. Make sure you give him a follow on Twitter at WrestleMania621. And there you have it. I mean, Chris said it the best. I mean, if the Redskins have the option of the exclusive and non-exclusive tag, I like the option of the non-exclusive. It gives the Redskins options. And in the event, you know there's some team out there, perhaps the Broncos, maybe even another team out there that thinks they're quarterback away, that would trade for the guy that finished in the top five in quarterbacks this past season, threw for over 4,000 yards. Only 25 touchdowns. But is that a function of Kirk or a function of the system or the lack of talent at running back, lack of talent on this Redskins team? I like the idea. Maybe the Redskins get a first and a third and let Kirk Cousins go. Give them an opportunity to maybe bring somebody in, a filler in through free agency. But it also gives you an opportunity to rebuild your team. Listen to me. This team obviously has, it's clear, they obviously have no, they're not going to give Kirk the money that he wants. So if you are inclined, and I truly believe that Scott McLuhan, he's not going to give Kirk the type of deal that he wants. So why waste another year on the franchise tag, spending $23, $24 million on a guy that you know is not going to be the future of the franchise? The best thing to do is to cut ties now, bring in another guy, maybe roll with Colt. That way it gives you an opportunity to rebuild your defense, pick up some extra draft picks, rebuild your offense, maybe draft a quarterback. You still have an opportunity to do that somewhere, a guy that can come in, learn under Jay Gruden. And in that case, it also gives Jay Gruden another year, because he doesn't have the talent that he needs at quarterback. That's just my opinion. I agree with Chris Russell on that. I think that would be the best course of action, the best option for the Washington Redskins. But, hey, what do I know? I mean, again, Scott McLuhan's probably forgotten more about scouting and being a GM and running an organization than in his sleep than I have in my entire life. And I'll admit that. I'm just a guy poking the bear on the radio. But the fact of the matter is the Redskins have a decision to make. They have to make the best decision for the team. The team. I say that to you again. The best decision for the team. And a team that is lacking clear talent across your defensive board. Can you justify investing $24 million of your salary cap this year to a guy that you know is not going to be here the following year? Because you're not going to give him the money that he would have got. You're not going to give him the long-term deal the following year at the numbers he's going to be making next year. And you're not going to franchise him again at $33-some-odd million. So the best thing to do is, like Chris Russell said, throw the non-exclusive on there, throw that apple out there and see if you get a bite. You never know. Some team might be desperate enough to take a chance on Kirk Cousins. Maybe it's the 49ers. If Kyle Shanahan gets that job, you never know. Stranger things have happened. Maybe the Cleveland Browns. I don't know. Wouldn't that be interesting to see Robert Griffin III and Kirk Cousins united together again on Cleveland? I'm done. All right. Okay. On the other side, oh, that would be great. You couldn't write. Oh, man, that would be totally great. Oh, God, I pray that actually happens. Oh, boy. Okay. On the other side, Washington Wizards. We got Wizards news this week. We'll take a look at what the games the Wizards have coming up. Interesting altercation. Again, dealing with the Celtics between John Wall and, remember, the Boston Celtics on Wednesday night. We'll talk about that and more on the other side. I'm Chris Dowdell. You are in the Loud House. So it's CBS Sports Radio, 1580.
Use the Force and turn up the radio.
It's the Loud House on CBS Sports Radio, 1580.
There's some altercation. I mean, we knew it was going to be some trash talking. We knew it was going to be a physical game. And that's all it was. Just a little trash talking, a little physical game. Yeah, I was just standing there. Just standing there. I had just headed up to IT, and then I was walking back towards my locker on my back.
Just an altercation, you say, John Wall? Wow. I mean, there was a whole lot of nose poking and slaps given for just an altercation. I mean, it's something. This Wizards-Celtics rivalry is exploding. And the thing about it is, if the season ended today, guess who would meet in the first round of the playoffs? That's right. Your Washington Wizards would meet those Boston Celtics. And God, I pray that that happens. I pray that that stays the situation. I'd love to see these two teams scrap it out in the playoffs. I mean, for those of you that did not get a chance to see what happened Wednesday night, it was a scrappy, chippy game to begin with. And it all goes back to the blowout that happened between the Wizards and the Celtics back in November. I mean, here in Verizon Center, I mean, the Celtics came to town and the Wizards just shellacked them. John Wall was later ejected in that game for shoving Marcus Smart in the closing minutes of the Wizards blowout victory over the Celtics in Verizon Center. So, yeah, that's where it didn't start there. It didn't start there, as reported by my good buddy Jay Michael. It actually started last season. You might recall last season, John Wall said something to Crowder after last season, where there was a disagreement between Crowder and Randy Whitman. And actually, John Wall or Crowder actually accused Randy Whitman of using obscenities against him. And then, of course, it didn't stop there. It didn't stop there because right after Al Horford decided that he was going to sign with the Celtics in free agency, Crowder immediately took to Twitter to throw shade, take another shot at Washington, saying he had Washington and some other team looking at him. I quote, this is a quote from Crowder saying he had Washington and some other team looking at him, but we beat them four times this year. You don't want to go there, end quote. Okay, Marcin Gortat immediately got involved, screen captured the whole nine, and said, we're going to remember this, and that might explain why the Wizards took this game from him and just took the heart and soul of the Celtics at that game at Verizon Center in November. Definitely had that game circled on their calendar. But this game didn't have the same results. It was a scrappy game. It was a game that saw Isaiah Thomas just totally take over the basketball game in the fourth quarter. I think he had like 19 or 20-something points or something like that in the corner or something ridiculous. So Isaiah Thomas, definitely no question about the talent and ability of this guy. But you saw what the Celtics are able to do. They're just that scrappy type of team. They're going to get in your head. The Wizards, in my opinion, definitely a more talented team across the board than the Celtics. The Celtics are just a grinded out, scrappy team. They're going to get out there. They're going to play that to me, that old Detroit Pistons style of basketball. They're going to bang you. They're going to chip at you. They're going to get in your head. They're going to talk to you. The Wizards talk. And I'm not saying it's just the Celtics, because that's probably how all this started. Both of these teams are trash. They like to talk to each other during the game. And the Celtics are just that type of team. They're going to give it back to you, but they're going to take advantage of it, and they're going to keep playing their style of basketball while you're talking. And that's why the Wizards, they got out of their game. They didn't play their game, which is why they lost this game. And there's a lot of other issues going on with the Wizards, so I'm not going to just say that this is the sole reason they lost this game. There's a lot of other issues going on with the Wizards. I mean, the bench play hasn't been what it, you brought in Jan Heamy, and he just hasn't seemed to reach that potential that you expected him to. Trey Burke, you know, he's off and on. One night he comes out, he'll score, you know, 19, 20 points off the bench. The next night, you know, it's just non-existent. So, you know, it's just the Wizards, you know, and if I'm John Wall, you know, that, again, we talked about this so many times in this program. That window is getting closer. I mean, this is not a team or a situation that John Wall can afford to put himself in, especially if he's going to be looking to re-up with this team in a couple years. You know, they have to try to put talent around him. And again, I think Ernie Grunfeld failed this year. I would be extremely surprised, and I'm not going to ask J. Michael anybody about it. I really want to, maybe off the record, I'll ask him, but I'm not going to put anybody on a spot like that to say, hey, do you think Ernie will be back? But, I mean, nobody has to, with the way this team is playing. I mean, they make the playoffs, okay, but the way this team is put together, you have to wonder whether or not, even if they make the playoffs, are they going to get out of the first round if the bench is still playing the way that it is? And John Wall and Bradley Beal, these guys, the stars, I mean, they're having to put in a lot of minutes just to stay in ball games, just to win ball games. The road record isn't what it is should be. I think they're something like 4-14 on the road. Great home record. I mean, the Wizards could play all their home games at home. They'd be in great shape. But I believe there is a 5-game road trip on the horizon coming up for this Washington Wizards team. And they've got to try to find a way, A, to get their bench cohesion up. They've got to try to find a way. I mean, Scott Brooks is going to have to try to play with the rotation a little bit, figure out a way to get guys involved, get guys motivated, get guys going, because this 5-game road trip, they cannot afford to go 1-5 on this 5-game road trip, or 2-3. They gotta break even. At least 3-2 on this road trip, if not win 4 of the 5 on the road. They at least need to hit 3 wins. I mean, I'd probably even take 2-3 on this road trip. It's going to be a rough one. I mean, you're going to play the Knicks. You're going to Detroit. You're going to play Charlotte. That's a tough team. You know, it's a 3-game road trip coming up. The 19th, the 20th, and the 23rd. Then you're home against Boston. Circle that date on your calendar, Tuesday, January 24th. That's going to be a good one. And then you go back on the road for 2 straight games against Atlanta. And then against New Orleans. So, you know, again, you're still playing, you know, between the 19th and the 29th, 10 days there, you're playing 5 or 6 games on the road. You got to win. You got to try and find a way to break even there. If you're able to win at Boston, you know, maybe you're able to beat the Knicks, who aren't playing the best basketball right now. Maybe you're able to get a win against Charlotte or Detroit, one or both. You know, the Hornets are actually playing some pretty good basketball of late. You know, none of these games are going to be easy games, particularly this time of year. You know, you're coming up on an All-Star break. teams are going to try to make a run, you know, and try to get hot before the break comes up, try to end on a good note. So these are all games that are going to be crucial to the Washington Wizards. Going to have to make sure they are in these games and they can win a bunch of these games. All right. Now, we had a scare earlier this week. John Wall also saying that, you know, he had some soreness in his wrist, in the left wrist, I believe it was. And that was the same wrist you might remember a couple seasons ago that had him out in the playoff series against Atlanta. Very, very hard. You know, again, I still say if John Wall is in that game, John Wall is in that series, you know, it's a different story. But, you know, x-rays and everything came back negative, so John appears to be all right. The Wizards are at it tonight at home against the Philadelphia 76ers, 8 p.m. So this is a game coming off that game that, honestly, they probably should have won. Just Isaiah Thomas with 38 points. I mean, just got hot. I mean, he was knocking down threes from everywhere. I mean, even with hands in his face, I mean, you can't – there's nothing you can do with that. I mean, he was knocking them down from everywhere. No, the Wizards got back to 500. They're 19-19 right now. You know, get back tonight, win a game at home. Yeah, three straight at home against Philadelphia Monday night. Get a day off Sunday. Come back Monday night against Portland, a day off Tuesday. And then Wednesday you play Memphis. Three straight games at home, which is a blessing in disguise for the Wizards. So they need to take advantage of that. Try to get two of the three, if not all three. The Portland game, definitely going to be a tough one. Grizzlies, not a slouch team either. That's going to be a tough one. But then you go on the road for that five out of six games on the road, starting 19th against the New York Knicks. So you got to take advantage of every opportunity. And the Wizards got to do that. I mean, it's, you know, I still say I find it hard pressing to, you know, Scott Brooks. I mean, do you blame Scott Brooks for not being able to figure out the bench rotation? I mean, was the problem really Whitman? I mean, don't get me wrong. The team's playing a lot better at this point this year than they were last year. But was the problem really Whitman? I mean, I think it's just the only team in Washington that just seemed to, I mean, it's a different situation than the Washington Redskins, and that the Wizards actually have some pretty decent talent on the team. It's just, for some reason, the talent that they have on the bench just hasn't blossomed yet. Again, and I've said it so many times in this program, if you're going to struggle, this is the time to do it. Struggle at the beginning of the season, come back, you know, gung-ho after the All-Star break and make a run. They got to try and figure out a way to make it work. All right, on the other side, take a look at the NFL Divisional Playoffs. I'll give you my take on those, break those down, do a little WWE, and we'll get out of here. I'm Chris Dowdell. You are in the Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580.
The Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580.
Thank you guys so much for joining us in the Loud House today. I want to take this time to thank my buddy Brian McNally for joining the program, my good friend Chris Russell. His take on Washington Redskins. A lot going on with the Redskins. A lot going on in the NFL. But, of course, the thing that it's on everybody's mind and everybody's talking about today is not Sean McVay. It's not Joe Barry. It's not who the Washington Redskins are going to have at or offensive coordinator. It's not who the defensive coordinator is going to be. It's not, you know, where Kirk Cousins is going to be next season, whether or not the Redskins are going to give him the franchise tag. The thing everybody's talking about today is the National Football League. That's what everybody's talking about. We got some great games coming up this weekend. I'm going to break them down. First game, I'm looking most forward to seeing is going to be the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, I mean, this is going to be a dogfight. The Chiefs aren't going down without a fight. It's going to be a great game. Of course, the Chiefs finished 2016 regular season with one of the best scoring defenses in the league, allowing opponents only allowing opponents an average of 19.4 points per game. On the flip side of that, you got a high-powered Steelers offense, which is scoring significantly more than 19.4, 24.9, almost 10 points a game more than the Chiefs are allowing. So this is almost like, you know, David versus Goliath. It's the most powerful offense against a stingy takeaway defense. I got the Steelers winning 23-19. I just don't see Ben Roethlisberger is playing his best football right now. I know he's got the nagging injury and things like that. I just, you know, it's going to be a dogfight, but when you got Roethlisberger, Antonio Brown, Le'Veon Bell, I mean, need I say more? And don't get me wrong, the Chiefs are going to get a bolster to their defense with the return of Justin Houston this weekend, Spencer Ware. But again, I think there's just too many weapons. The Steelers are playing great football last week. You saw last week they let Ben play just to get cohesion going. I think they're on a roll right now. I got the Steelers 23-19. All right, moving on to the other AFC matchup. And I think that if there's one game that might be the most boring to watch, I think it might be this one. And I'm going to go out on a limb and say that. It's tough for me to imagine that the New England Patriots are not, that the Houston Texans are even going to have a shot here. I'm going all in, 38-14, Patriots and a blowout. I mean, is there anyone taking the Texans to victory here? I mean, the Patriots average 27.6 points per game, the third most in the NFL. They also had a league top-scoring defense, holding opponents to 15.6 points per game. Now, don't get me wrong. I know. The Houston Texans, great defense. Number one, you know, defense in the league this year. Okay. And Clowney played an excellent game, actually, but you don't have your workhorse this week. I see Houston going down in flames. If they get behind early, you might as well pack it in. Go take the Patriots in a blowout, 38-14. All right, to the other big game, Seattle at Atlanta. This is a week 6 matchup. Now, it's kind of funny and interesting, and the football gods playing a little bit of a trick on us this week, because both the NFC East, both the NFC matchups this week are former week 6 matchups from the NFL. And the Cowboys against the Packers and the Seahawks versus Atlanta. But Seahawks and Atlanta, I mean, these are two coaching staffs that know each other. Falcons coach Dan Quinn was previously the defensive coordinator in Seattle. They run a similar style of defense in a cover three with those deep safeties and whatnot. But the big test for Seattle is going to be surviving without Earl Thompson. You can expect Kyle Shanahan to draw up some plays. And don't get me wrong, I think Stephen Terrell did a great job last week in the Seahawks victory, but you can expect Kyle Shanahan to draw up some plays to get Terrell and catch Terrell out of position with Matty Ice on Ice Sunday. I expect the Falcons to win 27-23. We move on to Green Bay versus the Cowboys. This was a tough matchup for me. This is probably one of the toughest games I had to pick, just because you got Aaron Rodgers on one side. The guy has been completely on fire in the last 7 games. I mean, you're talking about Aaron Rodgers' quarterback rating averaging through 7 games is 119.4 through 7 games. He has not thrown one interception in 7 straight games. He's thrown 19 touchdowns. The guy is playing completely on fire. But then on the flip side of that, you got a Dallas Cowboys team. You got Dallas Cowboys players who are nasty. They're ready to fight. They got they're going to give the Packers a full dose of Elliott this week. Dak has thrown 4 interceptions all season. The one interception he threw, of course, was against the Packers. It was a tough decision, but I'm going, even without Jordy Nelson this week, I'm going Packers in the win, 27-24. It was a tough decision. It was tough, but I had to go Pack. All right, on the other side, I'm up against it. We'll get to the WWE segment and more. You are in the Loud House. I'm Chris Dowdell.
It's the Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580. Glorious, 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 glorious,
I just feel disrespectful talking over this. Ah, yes, now we can begin the WWE segment of the program. I wish I had more time. I mean, the Royal Rumble's coming up. Great names entering the Royal Rumble. One such top-notch star, top NXT star, reportedly in early plans for a big push into WrestleMania 33. Current plans for current plans is to possibly even have him involved in the Royal Rumble, but that's unconfirmed. The Wrestling Observer News is reporting that Samoa Joe is reportedly involved in early plans that would see him called up to the WWE main roster and getting monster push time at WrestleMania 33. It was noted that the plans for WrestleMania weren't finalized, but the idea is on the table that would give Joe, or have Joe, be able to be at the top card of the event, or top a big match at the event. It was also speculated that Joe would likely start very soon in order for the plan to kick off. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? I mean, we've seen Samoa Joe. He spent a lot of time in NXT, been developed. You know, you've seen him going up against guys like the music that we're hearing right now, the top heel right now on NXT, Bobby Roode. You've seen him going up against these guys, some of them, of course, losing to Nakamura 2 times in a row on TV, you know, and of course, Bobby Roode as well. So it's now the time for more Samoa Joe. I think it is. All right, I'm up against it, so I got to make this quick. Brock Lesnar adding even more WWE Raw events heading into WrestleMania 33. While we're on the subject of WrestleMania, which is only about 2.5 months around the corner, so get ready. Brock Lesnar has been added to a numerous of WWE live events between now and WrestleMania 33, and we got a bunch of lists of dates. I'll put those on the WWE Facebook page as soon as the show is concluded. Lesnar will be appearing on all episodes of WWE Raw heading into WWE Fastlane on March 5th. However, he will not be appearing in the WWE Raw in Vegas on February 13th because he is currently serving a suspension by the Nevada State Athletic Commission. The suspension comes from UFC 200 anti-doping case, and NAC suspension applies to pro wrestling as well. So there's several dates between January the 16th right up to WrestleMania on April 2nd. I'll post those on the Facebook page. All right, guys, thanks so much for joining the program. Thanks so much for listening. Thanks again to my buddy B. McNally. Follow Brian McNally at B. McNally on Twitter. My good, good, good buddy, Chris Russell. Thank you so much for your input today, Chris Russell. You can follow him at WrestleMania621 on Twitter. Get all his work on DC Hot Reads. I'm Chris Dowdell. Thank you guys so much for joining me in the Loud House. We'll be back next week. I'm Chris Dowdell. You are in the Loud House on CBS Sports Radio 1580.